Welcome to International Edition. I'm Susan Yawkey in Washington. Ahead, is the U.S. government adjusting its mindset on pursuing terrorists?
Strains in both parties have emerged that suggest that in the future, these grants of power will be continuously reviewed and limited.
Reaction to the resignation of the FIFA head. The OECD considers alcohol use in their nations. What's trending on the web? And a boy bander goes it on his own. It's all ahead for you, coming up right here on The Voice of America. President Obama late Tuesday signed into law legislation that reforms the way the government collects telephone metadata in a bid to stop future terrorist attacks. The new law, called the USA Freedom Act, remakes the USA Patriot Act, which gave authority for the bulk collection of such information to the National Security Agency. Now, the government will have to obtain a court order to gain access to specific data from phone companies. The new law revives anti-terrorist programs that lapsed last week amid heated congressional debate over privacy rights versus the post-9/11 war on terrorism. The NSA's collection of the phone data was brought to light 2 years ago by former contractor Edward Snowden. You'll remember him. He revealed information about the secret program after fleeing the United States. He now lives in Russia. Speaking with Amnesty International UK via video link Tuesday, Snowden called the reform historic.
It is meaningful, it's important, and actually historic that this has been repudiated not just by the courts, but by Congress as well, and the president himself is saying that this mass surveillance program has to end. But when we think about optimism, and people go, is the fact that we've lost this one surveillance program, which everyone agreed was illegal and ineffective, is that enough? Is that the change we need? Is that everything that's going to happen? And of course, the answer is no. It's a first step, and it's an important step. But when we think about the victory that this change represents, that the striking down of this law represents, the rejection of this law by the legislature, it's not about the law at all. It's not about the sunset of the Patriot Act. It's not about the passage of the USA Freedom Act. It's about the fact that despite the reality that this program was considered ineffective and illegal by every branch of government, spies, security agencies, and their representatives in Congress argued that it should remain. They said, people will die if we lose this program, despite the fact that the court says that's never been the case, despite the fact that the White House says that's never been the case. We need to keep it anyway. And yet, for the first time in 40 years of U.S. history, since the intelligence community was reformed in the 70s, we found that facts have become more persuasive than fear. For the first time in recent history, we found that despite the claims of government, the public made the final decision, and that is a radical change that we should seize on, we should value, and we should push further.
While President Obama says the new law protects both civil liberties and national security, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said it undermines American security. VOA's Victor Beatty spoke about the issue with University of Virginia's Larry Sabato.
On the whole, the grant of power under the Patriot Act is still continued, and government pretty much has the same authority it did in the wake of 9/11. However, strains in both parties have emerged that suggest that in the future, these grants of power will be continuously reviewed and limited. What's significant is that in the Republican Party, which has always been more interventionist and more hawk-like, there has emerged a libertarian wing, which currently is headed by Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky, that believes government should not have all of this authority and power. They want it trimmed, and they're determined to get it trimmed, and they actually succeeded in some respects. Now, for example, the government will have to go to the phone companies for specific information on individuals instead of receiving bulk data of everybody's phone calls from the phone companies themselves. On the Democratic side, too, there is both support for the Patriot Act as amended, and there is opposition to doing as much as we're going to be doing even under this new limited version. Senator Bernie Sanders, for example, who's challenging Hillary Clinton for the Democratic nomination, is opposed to much of what is in this new version of the Patriot Act, the Freedom Act. All you have to do is look at what happened in the House of Representatives. You have Democrats joining together with Libertarian Republicans to cut back on the Patriot Act. So it's a new era, and it shows the progression of events and the change in public opinion since 9/11.
Is this a victory for privacy rights, constitutional rights in the U.S.?
It's a partial victory for privacy rights. The truth is, the Patriot Act mainly emerged unscathed, but it shows the drift of public opinion. Many of the polls that have been taken show that the libertarian side of this argument has the support of about 60% of Americans, and significantly, an even larger level of support among young people who gradually come into power themselves. So the future of the broad grants of power under the Patriot Act have grown a bit dimmer with this debate.
Is this suggesting the American people are concerned about an overarching government?
The American public is very concerned about terrorism, but they're also concerned that they shouldn't have to yield the rights guaranteed to them under the Bill of Rights in the Constitution just to ensure that terrorist attacks do not occur. There has to be a balance, and it needs to be fine-tuned constantly. And this debate was actually encouraging because it means that legislators are not simply blindly following the dictates of a president or of the National Security Agency or the CIA. They're actually looking carefully at what they've done and determining what needs to be changed for the future.
You mentioned this unholy alliance between Democrats and Republicans on this particular issue. Is this suggestive of future alliances that may change the fundamental U.S. policy?
I doubt it. I think this was a very special case. Now, there may come along another special case, but for the time being, this is probably about it. Democrats and Republicans disagree on almost everything else, domestically and in foreign policy.
Larry Szabato of the University of Virginia. Well, turning over to the next page, what's trending on the web today? Well, for that, we go to reporter Andrew Palchewski, who's joined me right here at the anchor desk. Andrew, what's up today?
Well, we have the story out of the U.S. city of Boston. Usama Rahim, this 26-year-old man, was shot by police. He was apparently being watched by anti-terrorism task forces for involvement with ISIS. And the interesting thing about this story is that the FBI was watching his social media. He had recently been contacting or been following ISIS-related social media accounts. He had recently been making threats against police on social media, and this was one of the things that kind of tipped them off. So it's interesting how social media is becoming not just a tool for people to share opinions, but a tool for cases like this to track people in cases where there are terrorism links and other...
And we were just hearing from Szabato about all this.
Exactly, yeah. Exactly. I mean, it's the world we live in now. Everything is public and everything can be used to kind of track people. Another story, and I know we're going to talk about this coming up in a little bit, so I'll just touch on it briefly. Sepp Blatter, the president of FIFA, resigning.
Yeah, to everybody's surprise yesterday.
It was, and no clearer picture of that surprise on social media. And I want to talk briefly. We had talked last week about the hashtag Blatter Out, which they were using as he was running for election. On June 1st, the day before he resigned, it was used about 600 times. On June 2nd, used over 36,000 times. And much of those comments, praise, cheering, gladness that Blatter's out and the future for soccer is maybe a little bit brighter.
It's very interesting. Well, thanks, Andrew.
Absolutely.
That's reporter Andrew Palchewski. You're tuned to VOA.
This is Science in a Minute. I'm Rick Pantaleo. A popular scientific theory suggests that modern humans originated in Africa, but a number of them left some 60,000 years ago and migrated to areas throughout the world. Scientists theorize that humans migrating out of Africa took two possible paths, a southern and a northern route. The southern route took humans out of Africa through Ethiopia, the Bab el-Mandeb Strait, and the Arabian Peninsula. The northern route suggests that humans exited Africa through the area that is now known as Egypt. Scientists from the Wellcome Trust Sanger Institute and the University of Cambridge recently conducted a genetic analysis that suggests modern human populations most likely used the northern route and left Africa through Egypt. Details of the researchers' findings have been published in the American Journal of Human Genetics. And that's your Science in a Minute.
U.S. news outlets say FIFA President Sepp Blatter is under investigation in the United States in connection with the corruption scandal involving football's governing body. He abruptly resigned his post during a news conference in Zurich Tuesday. The 79-year-old, who was just reelected to a fifth term as FIFA president last Friday, admitted that the organization needs a profound restructuring. For reaction to Blatter's resignation, VOA's Jeffrey Young spoke with Chris Eaton, executive director of sports integrity at the International Institute for Sports Security in Doha, Qatar.
Obviously, something has happened that we're not aware of, and it's clear to me that this resignation would not be made in the absence of something that that has significantly occurred since his re-election recently. So there's something, I'm sure, that will come out in the fullness of time about why he's resigned.
One would jump to a conclusion and say, maybe they got the goods on Mr. Blatter this time. There is a Swiss investigation, after all. Is that the sort of thing you're referring to?
Well, clearly, there's two investigations concurrent, at least two, and that's the U.S. investigation and the Swiss investigation. Both have been taking records from FIFA. Both have been examining evidence and hearing from sources. So it's clear that at least those two investigations might have some additional information, additional evidence that has put pressure on the president to resign.
You made the comment in an earlier interview with me that FIFA is one of the most opaque organizations on the planet. What is FIFA needing to do to become a responsible sport organization?
First, it needs to grow up into the real world of business affairs and transnational, multinational business. It needs to understand the need for transparency, accountability, best practice, know your customer, fit and proper persons tests, all these significant commercial and global commercial standards that of business that FIFA have never applied. They are really a private monopoly, a private club operating a sport monopoly. It's time for them to grow up.
Many of FIFA's multi-million-dollar sponsors praised Blatter's decision to step down. Coming up on International Edition, finding a pattern in alcohol drinking, celebrity facts on action reaction, and Nathan Sykes goes solo. Well, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development in Paris has released a new study on the use of alcohol in OECD nations. And one of the co-authors is Franco Sassi, who joins us now on the line. Welcome aboard, Mr. Sassi.
Welcome. Thank you.
Thank you. What did you find out?
Well, we found out that basically alcohol consumption has been relatively stable over the past 20 to 30 years in the OECD areas. But there have been alarming signs of an increase in risky consumption, particularly in young people and women. There is a strong call for action for governments in the OECD area to tackle harmful alcohol use.
Now, you note that certain patterns of drinking have social impacts. What are those patterns and what are the social impacts?
Drinking is very concentrated in the population, heavy drinking in particular. We estimate that the 20% of the population that drink the most actually drink the majority of all alcohol in all the countries that we have been looking at. And in some cases, up to 90% of all alcohol. Nevertheless, most people would actually benefit from reducing their consumption of alcohol in terms of improved health and decreased risk of diseases and mortality. The social distribution of alcohol consumption follows a very typical pattern with people, with men in low socioeconomic condition, disproportionately drinking at risk, whereas for women it is exactly the opposite, with women in high social class and with more education, more likely to drink at risk.
So we know the cost in health terms. What are the costs in economic terms?
Well, the impacts on productivity and the labor market are major because alcohol affects people's employment prospects, people's productivity on the job, their likelihood of being injured at work, and the likelihood to retire early from work on disability and sickness grounds. So the estimates that exist today of the impact on the economy of alcohol roughly show that about 1% of GDP is lost by major economies in the OECD area due to harmful alcohol use.
Is there really much a government can do about this?
But there are lots of things that governments can do. First of all, they should tackle the most harmful types of drinking, things like binge drinking, especially by young people, which have major detrimental consequences in the long term. And governments can do this by primarily doing things like enforcing existing legislation on to prevent drinking and driving, or through primary care doctors that can intervene on people who are most at risk for risky drinking. And then if these are not sufficient, governments can do broader things that affect a larger number of drinkers, like, for instance, raising the prices of alcoholic beverages through taxation or through interventions, regulatory interventions like the imposing minimum prices, or they can regulate advertising, the advertising of alcohol, the marketing of alcohol, which is clearly a powerful way for to increase the amount of alcohol that people consume.
Well, thank you very much for your time today. I certainly appreciate you speaking with us.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
This is VOA.
Trending on the web, it's Action Reaction.
Get ready. Time to blow your mind with a few celebrity facts. We begin with James Franco. Before hitting the big time, he was flipping Big Macs at McDonald's. So when he countered with, "Would you like some fries with that?" was he just mastering his craft? Christopher Nolan does not have a cell phone. Apparently, he only needs a bat phone. The Queen of England does not have a passport. Why? Because all passports are given in the Queen's name, so she doesn't need one. I guess they just stamp her crown through customs. Here's something you never knew. The King of Rock and Roll hid things behind his crown. That's right, Elvis Presley was a natural blonde. Rumor has it that he used one tube of hair dye for the top of his head, 10 tubes for his sideburns.
I'm using that greasy kid stuff, too. just like it.
For VOA's Action Reaction, I'm Lisa Hora.
Singer Nathan Sykes gained international fame with the boy band The Wanted. Last year, the band members decided to take a break. But as VOA's David Byrd tells us, Sykes has a new solo project, and the first single comes out this month.
Hi everyone, I'm David Byrd, and here's a look at what's happening in music. Last year, when the British boy band The Wanted announced that they were taking a break, singer Nathan Sykes was only 20 years old. But his passion for music didn't go away because he and his bandmates wanted a change. Sykes is launching his solo career with a new album, and the first single, Kiss Me Quick, comes out this month. The 22-year-old Gloucester, England native says that he could not imagine his life without music, so going solo was a natural next step.
I was 20 at the time when we decided it, and I was like, I'm far too young to stop doing what I love. And for anyone who's like, oh my God, he's left the band, he's like, well, what do you expect me to do with my life? Sit in a dark room for the next 10 years and wait for a phone call to say, oh, we're going to do another tour? It's like, what do you expect me to do? Do you know what I mean? So I was like, I love music so much, and I can't imagine my life without music. So I just went and made a solo record.
Sykes says that fans can look for his new album to be a departure from some of The Wanted's hits like Glad You Came or Chasing the Sun.
It's like soulful pop. And there's like a nice, healthy balance between fun, lighthearted, kind of flirty, upbeat, like kind of horn influenced tracks, and that kind of contrasts well with the deeper kind of like soul of the album.
For the new album, Nathan Sykes worked with producers and songwriters Harmony Samuels, Babyface, and Diane Warren to craft his sound. Nathan Sykes says that even his former bandmates in The Wanted liked the new sound, though they weren't above giving him a little ribbing about it.
They were like, wow, this is like a lot better than I thought it would be. I was like, that's a backhanded compliment. But I was like, what, did you not think I was capable of that? They were like, no, if I'm honest. I was like, oh, great, cheers, guys. But yeah, they're pleasantly surprised.
The full album is scheduled for release in the autumn in the UK and North America. And Nathan Sykes said he is always open to doing another album with The Wanted should he his bandmates decide they want to.
Obviously, I'm so focused on this at the moment and excited by it. But of course, the door's always open to doing something in the future, maybe with the boys.
For VOA's International Edition, I'm David Byrd.
Like to listen to today's program again or any previous broadcast, please visit our website at voanews.com. Go to the Programs tab in the upper right-hand corner, then scroll down to International Edition. Thanks for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The U.S. government's Millennium Challenge Corporation, or MCC, Chief Executive Officer Dana Hyde and Deputy Vice President Fatima Sumar met with Mongolian leaders to discuss development of the country's new compact and impacts and sustainability from the country's first compact. The discussions focused on MCC's approach to reduce poverty through economic growth, the Mongolian government's leadership role in developing a second compact, and the constraints analysis, a key foundation of compact development. The MCC delegation also congratulated the Mongolian government on the 25th anniversary of its democratic transition and reaffirmed the strong relationship between the United States and Mongolia. Both Mongolia and the United States agreed that the anniversary marks an occasion for continued cooperation between the two countries, as well as MCC's commitment to helping Mongolia consolidate its democratic transition by supporting its economic development. Throughout their week-long visit to Mongolia, the delegation visited projects from the first compact, including the Salkit Wind Farms, a vocational school in Qair, peri-urban rangeland areas in Tuv Amag, the Qair-Sainshand Road, and Hospital No. 3. They met with local government officials in Gobisamber and Umnagobi Amags and a wide range of civil society representatives, including women leaders. The delegation concluded its visit with a visit to Ulaanbaatar's Gur district and meeting with the mayor. In December 2014, the MCC Board of Directors selected Mongolia for the development of a second compact. Currently, MCC and Mongolian officials are conducting an analysis of the country's economy and constraints to growth. The Millennium Challenge Corporation is proud to work with Mongolia to sustain the gains it has made towards economic empowerment for all the people of Mongolia.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials.